Chapter 92. I see a natural and monster, loosely jointed, with an apocalyptic being's shape, and limbs and eyes 100,000 strong, and 50,000 heads, which coils itself about the buildings there. Spirit of the years, thou dost indeed. It is the monster devastation. Watch. Round the church they fight without quarter, shooting face to face, stabbing with unfixed bayonets, and braining with the butts of muskets. The village catches fire, and soon becomes a furnace. The crash of splitting timbers as doors are broken through, the curses of the fighters, rise into the air, with shouts of, "En avant!" From the further side of the stream, and, "Orwards!" From the near. The battle extends to the west by La Hamo and St. Amandla Haye, and Liney becomes invisible under a shroud of smoke. Voices at the base of the mill, "The sun will go down bloodily for us. The English, sharply sighed for by Prince Blucher, cannot appear. Wellington words across that hosts, have set on him at quarter bras, and leave him not one bayonet to spare." The truth of this intelligence is apparent. A low dull sound heard lately from the direction of quarter bras, has increased to a roaring cannonade. The scene abruptly closes. Scene by, the field at quarter bras, the same day. The view is southward, and the straight gaunt highway from Brussels behind the spectator, to Charleroi over the hills in front, bisects the picture from foreground to distance. Near at hand, where it is elevated and open, there crosses it obliquely, at a point called Les Quatre Bras, another road which comes from Nivelles, 5 miles to the gazer's right rear, and goes to Namur, 20 miles ahead to the left. At a distance of 5 or 6 miles in this latter direction it passes near the previous scene, Liney, whence the booming of guns can be continuously heard. Between the crossroads in the center of the scene, and the far horizon the ground dips into a hollow, on the other side of which the same straight road to Charleroi is seen climbing the crest, and over it till out of sight. From a hill on the right hand of the mid-distance a large wood, the wood of Basu, reaches up nearly to the crossways, which give their name to the buildings thereat, consisting of a few farmhouses and an inn. About 3/4 of a mile off, nearly hidden by the horizon towards Charleroi, there is also a farmstead, Gemiancourt. Another, Pyramont, stands on an eminence a mile to the left of it, and somewhat in front of the Namur road. Dumb show, as this scene uncovers the battle is beheld to be raging at its height, and to have reached a keenly tragic phase. Wellington has returned from Liney, and the main British and Hanoverian position, held by the men who marched out of Brussels in the morning, under officers who danced the previous night at the Duchess's, is along the Namur road to the left of the perspective, and round the crossroad itself. That of the French, under Ney, is on the crests further back, from which they are descending in imposing numbers. Some advanced columns are assailing the English left, while through the smoke hazes of the middle of the field two lines of skirmishers are seen firing at each other, the southernmost dark blue, the northernmost dull red. Time lapses till it is past 4 o'clock. Spirit of rumor, the cannonade of the French ordnance lines has now redoubled. Columns new and dense afoot, supported by fleet cavalry, straightly impinge upon the Brunswick bands that border the plantation of Basu. Above some regiments of the assaulting French a flag like midnight swims upon the air, to say no quarter may be looked for there. The Brunswick soldiery, much notched and torn by the French grape shot, now lie in heaps. The Duke of Brunswick himself, desperate to keep them steady, lights his pipe, and rides slowly up and down in front of his lines previous to the charge which follows. Spirit of rumor, the French have heaved them on the Brunswickers, and borne them back. Now comes the Duke's told time. He gallops at the head of his hussars, those men of solemn and appalling guise, full clothed in black, with nodding ersey plumes, a shining silver skull and cross of bones set upon each, to bespeak his slain sire. Concordantly, the expected bullet starts and finds the living son. Brunswick reels to the ground. His troops, disheartened, lose their courage and give way. The French front columns, and the cavalry supporting them, shout as they advance. The Allies are forced back upon the English main position. Wellington is in personal peril for a time, but he escapes it by a leap of his horse. A curtain of smoke drops. An interval. The curtain reascends. Spirit of the Pities, behold again the dynast's gory gear. Since we regarded, what has progressed here? Recording angel in recitative, musters of English foot, and their allies came palely panting by the Brussels way, and, swiftly stationed, checked their counter-braves. Nay, vexed by lack of like auxiliaries, bade then the columned cuirassiers to charge in all their etched array of weapon craft. Yea, thrust replied to thrust, and fire to fire, the English broke, till Picton prompt to prop them sprang with fresh foot folk from the covering rye. Next, Pyre's cavalry took up the charge. And so the action sways. The English left is turned at Pyrmont, whilst on their right perils infest the greenwood of Basu. Wellington gazes round with dubious view. England's long fame in fight seems sepulchred. A dominus roar swell loudlier liney ward. Spirit of rumor, new rage has wrenched the battle since thou'st writ. Hot hasting suckers of light canonry lately come up, relieve the English stress. Kellerman's cuirassiers, both man and horse all plated over with the brass of war, are rolling on the highway. More brigades of British, soiled and sweltering, now are nigh, who plunge within the bossage of Basu, where in the hidden shades and sinuous creeps life struggles can be heard, seen but in peeps. Therewith the foe's accessions harass nay, rack that no needful derlon darks the way. Inch by inch nay as to draw off. Wellington promptly advances. At dusk nay's army finds itself back at Frasnes, where he meets derlon coming up to his assistance. Too late. The weary English and their allies, who have been on foot ever since 1 o'clock the previous morning, prepare to bivouac in front of the crossroads. Their fires flash up for a while, and by the dead silence of heavy sleep hangs over them. Wellington goes into his tent, and the night darkens. A Prussian courier from Ligny enters, who is conducted into the tent to Wellington. Spirit of the Pities, what tidings can a courier bring that count here, where such mighty things are native born? Recording angel in recitative. The fury of the tumult there begun scorched quivering liney through the afternoon. Napoleon's great intent grew substantive, and on the Prussian pith and pulse he bent his foretimed blow. Blücher, to butt the shock, called up his last reserves, and heading on, with blade high brandished by his aged arm, spurred forward his white steed. But they, outspent, failed far to follow. Darkness coped the sky, and storm, and rain with thunder. Yet once more he cheered them on to charge. His horse, the while, pierced by a bullet, fell on him at bore. He, trampled, bruised, faint, and in disarray dragged to another mount, was led away. His ragged lines withdraw from sight and sound, and their assailants camp upon the ground. The scene shuts with midnight. Scene via Brussels. The Place Royale, the same night, dark and sultry. A crowd of citizens throng the broad place. They gaze continually down the Rue de Namur, along which arrive minute by minute carts, and wagons laden with wounded men. Other wounded limp into the city on foot. At much greater speed enter fugitive soldiers from the miscellaneous contingents of Wellington's army at Quatre Bras, who gesticulate and explain to the crowd that all is lost, and that the French will soon be in Brussels. Baggage carts and carriages, with and without horses, stand before an hotel, surrounded by a medley of English and other foreign nobility and gentry with their valets and maids. Bulletins from the battlefield are affixed on the corner of the place, and people peer at them by the dim oil lights. A rattle of hoofs reaches the ears, entering the town by the same Namur gate. The riders disclose themselves to be Belgian hussars, also from the field. Several hussars, the French approach. Wellington is beaten. Bonaparte is at our heels. Consternation reaches a climax. Horses are hastily put to at the hotel. People crowd into the carriages and try to drive off. They get jammed together and hemmed in by the throng. Unable to move, they quarrel and curse despairingly in sundry tongues. Baron Capellan affixed the new bulletin. It is a more assuring one, and may quiet them a little. A new bulletin is nailed over the old one. Mayor, good people, calm yourselves. No victory has been won by Bonaparte. The noise of guns heard all the afternoon became fainter towards the end, showing beyond doubt that the retreat was away from the city. A citizen, the French are said to be 40,000 strong at Les Quatre Bras, and no 40,000 British marched out against them this morning. Another citizen, and it is whispered, that the city archives and the treasure chest have been sent to Antwerp. Mayor, only as a precaution. No good can be gained by panic. 60 or 70,000 of the Allies, all told, face Napoleon at this hour. Meanwhile, who is to attend to the wounded that are being brought in faster and faster? Fellow citizens, do your duty by these unfortunates, and believe me that, when engaged in such an act of mercy, no enemy will hurt you. Citizens, what can we do? Mayor, I invite all those who have such to bring mattresses, sheets, and coverlets to the Hotel de Ville, also old linen and lint from the houses of the cures. Many set out on this errand. An interval. Enter a courier, who speaks to the mayor and the Baron Capellan. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.